Cuties, welcome to HW 3.50. Coming to the end of season three, I'm Jim. I'm joined, as always, by Jack. Kyle will be joining us later on tonight. We have a special guest for the episode, so we're going to get a quick 15-minute segment in now. If you're not listening live, please make sure to subscribe, follow, listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Spreaker. Quick shout out to our affiliate sites, FullPressCoverage.com and BellyUpSports.com. Belly Up Sports, they do what the others don't. And while you're listening to the episode, check out our site, hwhockey.net. Now, Jack, big guest coming on. Mr. Dave Pagnotta of the fourth period will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. Excited, number one. Let me just get that out of the way. We have a couple topics we want to get to with Mr. Pagnotta. We're going to get the ticker going here so we can show you guys some of the topics. So we want to know, are the Flyers done? We want to get his perspective on Ristolainen, not just, you know, how he's going to fit in the lineup, but the trade and Travis Sanheim arbitration. And I would like to ask your thoughts on that before we get to Dave, before Dave joins us. What's your kind of vibe with this whole Sanheim thing, man?
You know, to be honest with you, I was curious what they were going to do in free agency, knowing they had to keep money aside for Hart and Sanheim, but I was never really all that worried. We've seen numbers around the $3.75 million over 2 years or whatnot, and I don't know if it's smart to walk him to unrestricted free agency. He's going to get a raise. It's just how it is. It's just how much. And after this really bad season, not all his fault, but still kind of his fault, we didn't expect much. And even with the signings of Martin Jones and Keith Yandel and Nate Thompson, I thought we had plenty of money left over to sign those two and maybe have a little bit left over, more so for movement, not necessarily signing somebody else unless you move somebody out. But as time has gone on, it sounds like they don't have a whole lot to work with, and I'm a little confused. I don't see how either player, Hart or Sanheim, gets a significant raise. And it's a little frustrating because how could anybody on this team like actually ask for a significant raise? So what I'm hoping, best case scenario, it's not about that kind of a raise. It's about not walking Sanheim to unrestricted free agency and maybe getting a longer term deal in, which will have a higher cap hit than we expect after a year like that. But you're also buying those unrestricted free agent years, and maybe that has something to do with it. I have no idea as what the problem. I didn't expect this. I thought he would want either a 1 or 2 year deal to just reset the market for himself and play better. And a guy like Ristolainen as your partner and an overall revamped Flyers team would help that. But if he's just coming in here and saying, I need more money and that's not enough, that's really silly. But there's nothing to indicate that other than they're watching what they spend.
It is interesting. I think arbitration kind of helps the Flyers out, if you will. You know, arbitration is kind of a crappy thing. And we were talking before the show, you know, I had forgot that the Flyers have to kind of talk shit on their own player here, you know, and that's how they kind of talk his price down and whatnot. You know, you brought up the whole TO thing, which kind of cracked me up a little bit before the show. Hopefully it doesn't get ugly. I would assume that it maybe gets resolved before the arbitration. I've said it before, a 2 year deal for me makes sense, kind of like another bridge deal if I'm Sanheim, or even a 1 year deal. I mean, this is the second year of the flat cap, right? Supposedly it's going to be three tops.
That's what they said. I mean, different reports all over.
Okay. So for whatever reason in my mind, 3 years is sticking out, could be wrong. But if I'm Sanheim, I would say, okay, give me a 2 year deal. Take me, I'll be a free agent once the flat cap's done. And, you know, once it's done, you're going to pay me, right? Or someone's going to pay me because I don't have to, he doesn't have to sign back with the Flyers or whatever. He made 3.25 last year. In my opinion, did he play? Does he deserve a $750,000 raise? I don't know. And I know like 750K is kind of chump change when we're talking NHL and pro sports and whatnot, but you can't just hand guys money. You can't just hand out raises. I always kind of thought maybe the 3.5, 3.75 tops for Sanheim, like a 1-2 year deal makes a lot of sense for me in that range. But hey, the guy's 25 years old. He's going to be entering his prime, I think, soon. That's why, to me, a two-year deal makes sense, because when he's finished a two-year deal, he'll be 27, and he's due for that big pay raise, and he's going to get it from somebody, right? So that's why 2 years, 3.75, 3.5 always made sense to me. $4 million always seemed like a lot for what Sanheim gives you. I guess if you're the agent, it's kind of like, well, you know, he's going to outplay that contract easily, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I just don't understand it. Like you said, is he worth that 750K raise, if it's even that, and how? Like, if I'm arbitration, or they're at arbitration, you just look up last year's stats. I mean, I was looking for it here. He was a minus what? I don't think he was Nolan Patrick bad, but, and I'm not big on plus minus, but when it's a significant number,
yeah,
I mean, that's when you kind of take it into account, because it's that bad. And this is a defensive player we're talking about. He was minus 22 last year, 55 games played. He's considered a more offensive guy, yet he didn't get the power play time really. 3 goals, 12 assists, 15 points, minus 22. On his career, he's a minus 28. I understand he hasn't played with the best talent at times, and there was his initiation of Dragon McDonald around. In 255 games, 22 goals, 63 assists for 85 points. That's not bad, but it's this last season that was really rough. And I don't see how you can walk in with these numbers. And that's a really good point, Johnny. You know, look at those Rangers games where him and Myers like were trying to break records for plus minus six. They both were, you know, so it's going to be interesting.
It will be. And here, ladies and gentlemen, here is our guest, Mr. Dave Pagnotta of the Fourth Period. Dave, thanks for joining us for the episode. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're real excited to get you on. There's a hell of a lot to talk about in Flyer land. So we want to kind of pick your brain with a couple topics here. First and foremost, you're big in the rumor mill, lots of connections. We're kind of still wondering, are the Flyers still in the market for a 3C, or are they going to fix that internally?
I think if, you know, at this stage for a lot of teams, it's now searching for the bargain deals. And, you know, if a player becomes available, or, you know, a free agent decides to look elsewhere, as the weeks kind of progress here, the numbers start to go down, then I think some of those kinds of options could be available. Now, you know, you look to a solid 3C, a veteran like Tyler Bozak, is he sticking around in St. Louis? Are teams like Philly going to look at him? Are there going to be other options available out there as well? So, you know, as these things kind of, you know, drag on, I know it's August and typically, you know, this would be a pretty silent season or type of month of the season. But, you know, guys are still looking for jobs and things like that. So desperation kind of sets in, not so much on the team side. Now it's on the player side to see how they can maximize their money, knowing that they're going to get a lot less than they may have originally thought.
Interesting. So next, we wanted to ask you about, and it's been, you know, a pretty polarizing player. I mean, the Flyers ship out two polarizing guys in Flyer Twitter world, in Robert Haig and Shane Gostisbehere. And funny enough, they bring back a guy in Rasmus Ristolainen, and the guy hasn't stepped foot on the ice yet, hasn't even put on the sweater. And, you know, already there's arguments breaking out. It's the analytic crowd and, you know, the other crowd. And I kind of want to ask your thoughts here. What was your initial thoughts on the trade? And then can you tell us how you foresee Ristolainen fitting in to this Flyers team?
Well, I mean, you know, definitely it was a steep price to pay, but I mean, there were five or six other teams, give or take, that were looking to give up a first-round pick as part of a package for the guy. So, you know, a lot of people around the league are chalking him up to crappy situation, rough team, rough stretch to the start of his, you know, career out in Buffalo. So change of scenery, an opportunity to play in a contract year in a different environment should be motivation enough for him to be the type of player that a lot of people expect and anticipate. That's why there was so much interest in this guy. That's why there's been so much interest in him over the years. So, you know, this was kind of like a final straw for the Buffalo Sabres with him, with Sam Reinhart. They're getting there with Jack Eichel to get that part of their era out of the way and behind them so they can focus on the future. And the Philadelphia Flyers are getting a defenseman, as I said, highly motivated to have a good year and to prove everybody that he is a capable top four defenseman in the NHL. And I mean, I'm of the belief that he will do that. And I think this was a good ad for the Flyers. You got to keep in mind, the mandate's to make the playoffs and make some noise this season. So how do you do that? Well, you bring in strong, reliable pieces that can help you get to that point. You're not going to be getting 22-year-old young stars on the rise. You're getting established NHL talent. And that's what the Flyers did this offseason so far. And that includes Ristolainen.
So I would have – go ahead, Jack. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, with Ristolainen and the other moves they made, it's tough depending on who you talk to, but the overall theme is they are significantly better on defense. Maybe even a weakness is now a strength. Where do you sit with all the moves they made, particularly on defense?
Well, I like them, and there's no question they needed to address that. They've needed to address it since, you know, Matt Niskanen hung up his skates. They solidify the right side. They stabilize the overall decor. It should help Carter Hart and Martin Jones when he gets in there. You know, I like it. I like the fact that they were being, you know, bold enough. Everybody's I mean, not everybody, but a lot of teams are afraid to take that step, to take that chance. And, you know, I think the bar was changed a little bit when Columbus a few years ago decided, you know what, the hell with this. We're going to lose Panarin and Bobrovsky in the offseason. We might as well make some noise and get Duchesne and get all those other guys that they made, DeZingle and so on. So some teams are recognizing that, you know what, what are we waiting for? Might as well at least go for it and try to make some noise. And hopefully we can, you know, get past teams into the postseason, get to the second round. And once the playoffs get going, you know, it's anybody's ballgame. So I like the moves. I like the change of scenery for Voracek to get him out there, bring in a guy like Cam Atkinson, who I think will bring a strong level of energy to this group. And, you know, little tweaks here and there. I think this team is certainly better. How much better? I mean, on paper, it looks good, but obviously games played on the ice.
Absolutely, yeah. And it seems like we're going to be having this Ristolainen debate from here to the end of eternity. It just I can see it already. And it's purely analytically driven, it seems. And I'm not sure if you're an analytic guy at all or if you just you understand it's a piece and, you know. But why do you think, and this is kind of a tough question, I guess, but why do you think that the GMs in the entire league, well, most of it anyway, enough guys asking for Ristolainen and offering top picks, are definitely want him besides the feistiness. And the analytic crowd is just horrified by this trade, and the sky is falling.
Well, I think there's the notion that the first round pick is, you know, the golden goose. I mean, we don't know. Nobody knows what those things are. You know, they sometimes they turn out great. Sometimes they never hit the NHL ice. So, you know, you're taking a chance. But again, are you comfortable just sitting there and, you know, hoping that maybe if everything goes well, we can make the playoffs? Or are you going to try to make those additions to make yourselves better, to move forward and to try to, you know, solidify your group in order to make the playoffs, not just try to do it. You know, I look, first of all, the analytics aspect of the game is tremendously valuable. I'm not an expert by any stretch, but I've learned over the last few years to intertwine it into my analysis, our analysis at the fourth period. We actually have a segment we do throughout the season called Dirty Data, where we utilize analytics from Shane Kelly, who's one of our guys, and he's an analytics expert, with Aaron Ward, who's a former NHL three-time Stanley Cup champ. So we're intertwining the analytics with the eye test and seeing how we can marry the two. Just to kind of, you know, get a good sense of how teams are evaluating their talent. And that's what they do. There's a strong base in analytics, but you've got to intertwine it with, you know, the hockey parameters of the game and the other intangibles that you can't calculate. So, you know, again, is a change of scenery going to do him good? I haven't talked to anybody that says no. The numbers suggest he sucks, but the talent suggests otherwise. So how do you intertwine those two? You got to give it a shot. And again, I think that will help him. I think, you know, Cam Atkinson will do better in this environment because there's more talent there. And the look, first of all, I caught him off guard. I think I was the first or second person to talk to him after the deal. And he was totally caught off guard by it. You get over that, and then you move to an environment where you're in a position to compete for a playoff spot, which Columbus is going to be it's going to be tough to do, and it's been a bad stretch there. So, you know, that's a motivating factor by himself. You can't just strictly utilize the numbers to determine the fate of a player, because if you did, Chicago's never paying that price for Seth Jones.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, that was a lot.
Right.
I'll move on. You mentioned earlier when we asked you about the Flyers adding a center and whatnot and to bargain bin hunting. It seems the Flyers have just over $8 million left, but there's two big restricted free agents they need to sign. Looking at $8 million and how poor the season was last year, I thought that would have been plenty to at least get them under contract for this season. But it seems like, well, Sanheim is going to arbitration with the Flyers. What's your read on that whole situation?
They've been going back and forth. I mean, you can still agree and sign a contract up until right before the start of the hearing. So there's still time to obviously get a deal done with him and with everybody else. It's a tactic that's available and that, as we saw, I think 17 players used it for now. But the contract talks will continue. They've talked long-term. They've talked short-term. They're trying to figure out what their options are. You know, from this side of things, I would imagine my guess is somewhere within a 4 to 6 year range is probably what you're looking at, because you don't want to give up too much of your UFA years, but at the same time, you want to make sure you're being paid in the event that you do spike the way that you think you are and your agents think you are. So there's got to be that balance, which is probably why we're seeing that mid-tier, or we will see probably a mid-tier range type of deal, you know, for him. As far as the money, I'm not exactly sure. But there's still, I think the hearings begin in, just looking at my calendar, I think a couple of weeks. So there's still obviously time to get this done. And his agency that represents him at Newport, they have a long history of avoiding arbitration, which is a good sign. I think they've only done, there was a stretch where they hadn't done any ever. And then a few years ago, I think they had one and then maybe another the following year. So they've got a good history of trying to get things done before you get to that point. My guess would be they don't, but, you know, hopefully for everybody's sake, they do, because it's an ugly situation.
Well, and you said an ugly situation. I was joking with Jim that the team's really got to just talk crap on their own player, and it's really awkward and weird. Yeah. But do you think this has potential to get, I know it's different with every player, to actually get ugly though, with the season Sanheim had? I know he's a first round pick. I know there's talent there. We've seen spurts, but we haven't really seen sustained, you know, talent that they can rely on. And you have to, this is results driven business. And last year was horrific. And I, if it's more about not walking into unrestricted free agency and finding that sweet spot number with years, that's understandable. Do you think there's a margin here for it to actually get ugly and the relationship with the Flyers and Sanheim to sour?
I don't think you're there yet. I mean, I think if it gets to arbitration, maybe, because now the player's involved and he gets to hear all that crap. That's what the agents are for, right? They handle all that brunt. They deal with all the BS, and then they go back to their guy and say, all right, sign this. We got it. You know, so a lot of guys want to be engaged and updated as things go, but you know, the heated stuff of the discussions, the agent kind of cushions them from that, which is, again, that's their job. I don't think it gets to that point. I think, you know, their group, the guys that run him, or run his contract negotiations, Craig Oster and them, I think they've got a good handle on things. And I would imagine they get there. But again, I mean, you know, I could be wrong. They may say, you know what, let's do a 2 year deal. And if you have a good year, we'll pick up negotiations in the off season and try to get that extension done. You know, that's entirely possible as well. At the same time, a lot of teams recognize and agents recognize the need to pay for potential as well. And I'll use Andreas Athanasiou as an example. He was on a 1 year, $1.5 million deal with LA. He re-signs a one-year $2.7 million deal that a lot of people didn't anticipate by any stretch, but you're looking at the potential, where they fit in the lineup, how they're going to perform, where we think that market value will be, and then that's the number. And obviously he's a forward, Travis is a defenseman, but just as an example of paying for potential, that's one example that you know, you can look to if both sides believe that Sanheim will be, you know, as good as he was a couple of years ago, and this past season was just a, you know, a blip on the radar like so many other guys on the team hope.
Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. For his sake and for the Flyers' sake. I mean, hey, I would love for them to be able to pay this guy, right? Because he's a good player. He shows flashes how good he can be. Let's see. You know, if it goes to arbitration, that's kind of crappy, but hopefully they get it resolved. Before we let you go, Dave, I want to ask you one more question. Chuck Fletcher obviously did a lot of work to this roster. With 2 months left before, you know, the first before the season starts, is he done? Is this the roster that we're potentially going to see on opening day, or is he going to add another piece or two?
You know, again, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not done. Because again, look, there's the free agents period now. And then as we get into training camps, there's also that other window. Not all teams utilize, but there's another window there that says, okay, we're in camp. It's been a week. I really am not buying into this guy being our 3C or our 6D or whatever it may be. We need to look at other options. I do know, you know, as one example, they were in still on and this is an extreme, but Vladdy Tarasenko, they were in on him up until about last week. Was the last update I had on that, that they were still engaged in some type of conversation with St. Louis. I can't imagine he's the only guy that they're at least talking about out there. So you do your due diligence, you look around, you see what's available, and if something falls into your lap, you kind of roll with it. And I think that's what Chuck Fletcher is looking to do while still keeping his options open. Again, if there's a, you know, a depth for a bottom six guy or, you know, a veteran D or all of a sudden there's, you know, somebody on the trade market that becomes available, can they work out a deal? You know, I think he's going to always keep his options open. It's a very short off season. Everybody wants to go relax a little bit and have a couple margaritas and hang out. But, you know, I think with the shortened off season, the way things are, you get a week or two out of it and then you get back to business. So we'll see how things go. I think, so this is just a really long way of me saying that. Long winded. I apologize, but just, you know, I think he's bargain hunting, and if the right deals come into play, then I think he would pounce on him.
All right. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. From the man himself, Mr. Dave Pagnotta. Dave, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for hanging out with us. And Hey, you guys do great work at TFP. Love what you guys do. And hopefully we get to talk again in the future.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me. And yeah, definitely. Let's do this again.
All right, Dave. Enjoy the rest of your day. Take care.
You too, guys. Thank you.
All right, there he is, the man. A lot of info. We'll be back with the second part of this episode tonight. Kyle will join us to discuss everything we just heard from Dave. I mean, dude, you're not getting it from, you know, a better source, right? This guy knows his stuff. He's in the middle of everything all off season long, all year long. And a lot to get into tonight, Jack.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure having him on. I apologize. We didn't get everybody's questions. I wanted to ask all of them. Our time was limited. That's why this is at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I do apologize for not getting all the questions in. There's plenty of good ones. I'm reading them now thinking, man, I should have asked him about Martin Jones when he mentioned him. It would have been an easy in, but his time was limited. We did the best we could with the time we had.
We'll have to get him back on for sure. So at that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tonight and we'll see you then. Thanks for watching. All right, we're back. We're going to break down that first 15-20 minute part of the episode. Of course, with the David Pagnotta interview earlier today. Lots to get to. We've got a new face at the bottom of the screen here. Kyle's joining us for this one.
Pretty face here.
He's our special guest every week.
Yes.
I did start as a special guest.
It's true.
And then I just stayed. Somehow I roped you guys into letting me stay.
It's been a real awkwardness for about 2 years now.
Is Kai ever gonna stop showing up?
So let's get to the interview a little bit. We talked about, you know, are the Flyers going to fill the 3C spot? Is Chuck Fletcher done tinkering with the roster? Didn't sound like he was done. Sounded like there could be possibly another move or two. You know, according to Dave, there's nothing imminent, but it's always subject to change. There's 2 months left till the regular season starts. Who's to say he's done? I want to know what you guys think. Looking at the roster now, would you like another move or two, or is this roster complete and you're ready to hit the ground running come October?
I mean, I always wanted them to add they added physicality and grit on the back end, but they really didn't add anything to the forward group in terms of your bottom six. Like, there's no big bodies in that forward group that play a big style. Like, you know what I mean? A big physical style. So you can be physical on the defensive side of the puck, but who's providing our forecheck at this point? Kubel? I mean, provided he takes a step, I mean, forward, which is, I mean, we already banked on kids taking steps forward. We've seen how that worked out last year. So is there a chance that he does? Yeah. But that's it? Scott Laughton? I don't know, man.
I think you bring up good points, dude. And I was listening to actually Jack's episode on Full Circle, and he and Steve were talking about the Islanders, how they think the Islanders are going to take the division, you know, all these positives and whatnot. And in my mind, the Islanders are built for the playoffs. And there's no doubt, at least to me, that the Flyers have improved their roster in ways that they needed to. You know, they added defense. You added a Cam Atkinson. They changed the locker room. You're hoping that positivity spreads. But in terms of making a deep playoff run, did they add those types of players to the roster yet? I don't think they did. What do you think, Jack?
I totally agree with Kyle. It's like they did it on the back end, but two of the guys that we think of grit are guys who aren't going to be in the lineup most nights in Nate Thompson and Sam Moran. You know, and it's great to have them. It's great to be like, oh, Tom Wilson's coming to town, or now Ryan Reeves is coming to town, and plug one of those guys in the lineup. And they do bring other, you know, things to the lineup as well. But when we're truly trying to win and going full skill, they're not going to be in the lineup. And the forward group has almost nothing. Scott Laughton, I guess, is your best go. Auburn Kubel, who really took a step back last year. I'm not even 100% sure he's an NHL player. He probably could be on the fourth line, but we need to see more out of him. We'll see what Wade Allison and Lozinski are made of, but I know Lozinski's got some injury issues, and I don't know if Allison's quite that type of player compared to guys, and even in our own division, forget the playoffs, like Wilson, Reeves, and I believe the Rangers added several other players of that nature. And these are two teams that are, I believe, are going to be right there with us in the race. Whether the Capitals fall off or not, they still have, you know, they have Wilson, and they know how to win in the playoffs. The Rangers are on the rise, and they added that grit. You bring up the Islanders, one of the players I wanted the most. I wanted the center in here for the third, fourth line, who was pretty good. Zizekas, I loved on that fourth line for the Islanders with Martin and Clutterbuck. Like, I thought he really made that line go. He did a little bit of everything. I'd have taken a Blake Coleman, I'd have taken a Gaudreau, any of these kind of names, and they came up empty. And you said earlier, are they done? Are they going to make another move? And it seems unlikely. I think you would like to, like we were told. I just, because of this arbitration with Sanheim and Hart and whatever's going on there, I think any wiggle room they had is probably gone, or they at least can't bank on it. Sure, could we get a bargain bin Tyler Bozak? Potentially, but I still think you need to figure out these contracts first. And by the time they do, I think these guys will probably have signed elsewhere. And it's a shame. I feel like we're skill-wise, we have some serious depth at wing, right and left, and we're a little weak up the middle. And it would be nice to move, I don't know who, but nice to theoretically move a wing for a center, and you'd want that center to have that grit. I just don't know how that matches up now as the dust starts to settle.
I agree. And I'm not sure, you know, where they're going to find these bodies. I'm not sure where they're going to put them. Like you're saying, if you look at the Flyers roster, the roster is basically filled out. They have way too many wingers. What they need is more center depth. Nate Thompson, in my opinion, is depth. I like Nate Thompson, but I would rather see some
fifth line player.
Right. He's a fifth line guy.
He's a fifth line player.
You would rather see somebody different on your third and fourth lines, right? So I don't know. Is it possible that Wade Allison starts the year on the fourth line? I think so. Is he the guy you want? But is he the guy you want playing on your fourth line? Go ahead and elaborate a little bit there, Kyle.
Nah, he's got too much speed, too much tenacity, and he's a skilled player. This is his second year in the league. I don't want to put him into a position where he's going to be held back by a slow center in Nate Thompson. You know what I mean? Or Kubel making stupid mistakes like he did for most of last year. I want him on that third line. I want him to have another skilled winger with him, whether that be JVR or whoever's on that other side. And I think that Lawton's speed matches up good with Allison's tenacity and his speed. But again, like you said, you're just running into this cluster F of wingers that all are just kind of the same player. Mm-hmm. Like Farabee, Allison, like they're all fast. They all play hard, but like you got to mix it. You got to sprinkle in a little bit of that sandpaper somewhere. And I think Allison does have it. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see more of that next year. He did have a couple of scraps down with the Phantoms. And I know he was hitting a lot down there too. But this is the NHL. This is the big boys. Hitting in the A and hitting in the NHL. That's two different things.
It's true. It is true.
I mean, Wade Allison's not a guy that you play on your fourth line like Kyle alluded to. He is a Scott Hartnell, Wayne Simmons type. He will throw the body around. He will fight probably when he has to, but he's still a skillful player first. He was a second round player. He's going to play his game. He's going to create space. Kind of what we saw, he was really energetic on the ice, never giving up on a play. You don't want a guy like that playing, you know, with shutdown minutes. Like you want him trying to put the puck in the net, making the other, wearing the other team down in their own zone. And that's what I envision him as. He may not start on the first or second pairing, which is fine. I see him on the third pairing, and we know as the season goes, everything's going to change. And I kind of like the Nate Thompson signing because people are going to get hurt. We know it. It's just going to happen, and it's going to be little nicks and bruises here and there. He's going to get plenty of playing time. But yeah, I mean, if we're a playoff team, and we should be, we all are going to be looking for the same thing: a depth center, preferably a third line center with grit that we could add at the deadline. I don't know, based on the teams, who that's going to be, but I know come, when is it, March, April, depending on, because this year's a little bit off, that deadline, that's exactly who this team, outside of a major injury, is going to be gunning for. And it's a shame you can't do anything about it now, but again, Sanheim and Hart's next contract is holding up any money they do have left, and having a little over $8 million with those two to sign, even if they get deals, they're not going to have enough left over to get anybody of true value in here to fill that role now.
Yeah. Question for you guys. Give me a way too early prediction on how many goals Wade Allison scores this year. I'll give you an over under of 14.
I go over one. I'm going over 15.
The number that popped into my head was 17.
Mitch Mack with 18. All right, so we're all in the same zone there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I hope so. I mean, you're hoping that these lines, depending on who the center is, with the defense actually getting the puck out of the zone, maybe we're going to have more possession numbers. And, you know, if he plays the way he did at the end of last year, I don't think that's crazy at all.
I think his style alone provides 10 at least. His style alone, the straight to the front of the net, the digging around in the corners and then going to the front of the net, getting the puck out to the point, going to the front of the net. That alone, I mean, look at JVR. Not saying that Wade Allison is or has scored 30 goals in the NHL, but he plays a similar style in the sense that he knows what he's doing in front of the net. He has pretty silky mitts when he's around that net, and he can tuck the puck in, and I think he's going to easily pot 15.
I'm going to be honest. I did not come into tonight thinking that I was going to get this excited over Wade Allison. You guys are getting me juiced up right now. I was not feeling great before this episode, but now I'm feeling pretty damn good. Wade Allison's going to have a year. I think the time off I kind of forgot how he played, but he brought energy, brought physicality. He was a net front presence. Because the way I was thinking was, all right, this guy can put the puck in the net, but he's also this kind of player. Let him work his ass off on the fourth line, and if the opportunity comes up for him to put the puck in the net, yeah, go for it, and allow him to play his way up. But you guys are reminding me just how well he finished last year. And so I think, you know, putting a guy like that on your fourth line may be doing a disservice to him. And I don't think, you know, when Chuck said he wants to establish an identity on the fourth line, I'm not sure putting Wade Allison on the fourth line was part of that plan. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go with you guys here.
Yeah, but I'm just the thing that bothers me about the whole identity on the fourth line is, like, what is it right now?
Right.
Thompson, you got slow. You got extremely slow. Okay defensively. Zero offensive ability whatsoever in Thompson. You have Knack, who's fast. Not much offensive ability, especially with a center that can't even get over the red line by the time the whole line's at the blue line. Like, and then yeah, who's the left side there?
Lezinski, I guess. Like, looking at it now, it's tough because I'd like Scott Laughton as my 4C, but he might. I don't know if they're going to move Giroux back to C with the strength at wing and the, I don't want to call it a weakness, but not as much depth at center. If Morgan Frost doesn't win the job out of camp, which I think we all are saying is probably not going to happen, I could see them moving G back to center because it just makes sense with the wing depth you have.
If you have G in a third line center role, I mean, that's some center depth. If you put G back to center, and if you have Wade Allison and JVR, who we all know G plays well with, on that line, not a bad third line at all.
I'm definitely not against it. You know, we'll see what happens, how things shake out. But you brought up the giving a fourth line the identity, and of all the boxes that Fletcher checked, I think that's the one he missed because all he did was sign Nate Thompson. I mean, and there's no who's coming up that you legitimately see as a fourth line, you know, stalwart. I mean, as weird as that, it's like an oxymoron saying that, but
no, but like, you need that. You need that though.
Right. Exactly. And like, I like Lezinski and what he can bring, but one, he's got to prove he can stay healthy. And two, I don't think that's, unless he freaks out, I don't think he's truly an identity. And bringing back a 34-year-old Nate Thompson, that's not an identity either. He's a depth piece. I like it, but it's a depth piece, you know? So, I mean, that's the one fail I think they have, and it fails is a little dramatic, but they did need to get tougher. They're too easy to play against. They lose a lot of board battles, and their forward depth, as Kyle brought up, is grit-wise, it's not there. So hopefully it doesn't bite us. Hopefully the defenseman can pick that up. Hey, maybe Sam Moore moves back to wing. I don't know. Maybe that's how you get it.
That experiment is sold.
If they can't get him in the lineup and they want some grit, they'll find a way.
But, yeah, I don't see Moore playing on the wing much this year. I think because of the amount of games and because of the age of that bottom pair, you're going to see some slip seating of Yandle, Braun, Morin.
No, I don't think that's a realistic thing either. I'm trying to think of anybody in the minors, like prospect wise, who hasn't been brought up yet. That's a winger. I'm not thinking center. So no Rubstoff or nothing.
Just Wisdom. That's the only person I can think of that would fit the fourth line bill.
Now, that, remember, that he
is an identity.
He did like what he did in the AHL last year as an underager because of COVID. So that's something to consider. If he didn't keep the pace, but he was definitely able to play. And that's meaningful for his age. And I think he'll be with the Phantoms again. I think there's an agreement or something. I could be wrong about that.
It's not official yet, but they're not official. They're talking. Yeah. Cause
oh, I hope so.
Basically what it's him and Tyson Forrester.
Yep. And they both look good. I mean, Zade Wisdom's entire game translated to the AHL, where Forrester scoring did, but not everything at this didn't point. They're both underagers.
At the end of the year, didn't Wisdom get in a couple of NHL games?
Wisdom?
Hang on, I'll tell you right now.
If he did, shame on me for missing.
He did not.
I was going to say, I thought that would have, because that's great. That would have been –
Must have been preseason.
Draft year, I believe. That would have been crazy. That, I mean, that's really good. But you know, a lot of guys don't see him as an NHL player, who mostly outside of the organization. He's off to a hell of a start. I mean, and to come into the AHL at his age and have his entire game translate, and hopefully he can be more consistent this time around if he is back in the AHL. If he is, maybe he's somebody they consider. I mean, this is down the road, but it's something. It's an option, because they should go for a third-line center at the deadline. I don't know what kind of money they're going to be working with. I'm hoping Fletcher stays firm on his culture change of the locker room. So if any players aren't with that change, we could have a winger for center trade down the line, and maybe it checks the rest of the boxes we need to check. It's all speculation, but ultimately the question was asked, is this a finished complete product? And while they're vastly improved, it's not. I think it's missing some key pieces, and a lot of those pieces it's missing are playoff pieces.
Yeah. And Chuck, I think, came out and said it. He wants to give the fourth line an identity. And I don't know if he did that, or maybe he's thinking, yeah, I have the pieces. This is the way we got to play. I'm not sure. Not sure. It's funny, because last week we spent a lot of time talking about the third defensive pairing, and this week we spent so far over 15 minutes talking about the fourth line. It's good to be a Flyers fan right now, eh?
The one concern I have, like me and Jack brought it up, G moving back to center and playing that third line center role. While I'm not opposed to it, I really do like Coots and G on the ice. If somebody gets kicked out of a draw, you have two centers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it works.
I have a question for you guys. And I agree with you, Kyle. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm essentially in agreement. These guys are at the top of the league in faceoff percentage. Nate Thompson's up there too, but believe it or not, just for shits.
Sure.
What line do you envision Cam Atkinson playing on?
Second.
Or with who, I should say.
I say second line. He's going to be with Hayes and Farabee. They're going to slide Farabee over to the left.
I see a lot of that, and this is my question. I have two things, really. One, Cam Atkinson scored his 40-goal year with Panarin, which I'm sure a lot of players' stats would improve vastly. Why are we so quick to put Konechny on that top line? I like Konechny. Between the three of us, I feel like I like him the most, but I would rather start Atkinson with the most talent to see if I can capture that. He's also got 2 35-plus goal years as well. Konechny's never even scored 30. So when I look at
Torts had him playing fourth line minutes.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, like, I want to get him with the talent to – he may not be that 40-goal scorer anymore, but he should flirt with 30, you would think. Where Konechny, I like him, but do I really want to just give him that first-line role? I lean towards Atkinson, personally. And I probably wouldn't – I don't know what I'd do with the power plays. He's not on my first unit, but he's definitely a penalty-killing machine. So I don't know. I could see him playing with Coots and whoever else is on that line.
Dude, I really have no idea. I've tried to put lines together, and I'm just like, I got no idea what the hell this is going to look like. Like, no, not a clue. Like,
I guess for me, every lineup I see, it's automatic Konechny right wing. Everyone. And I'm like, why? I don't know. Why are we so quick to just give it to him? You know what I mean? Is it a confidence thing? Like when the Phillies brought Brett Myers out of the bullpen and made him the opening day starter. That was like a confidence building thing. I don't know, but
I would like to, I mean, either one. So it's like, no matter who you put with Coots, whether it's TK or Atkinson, their offense production is going to be more significant than it would be with Hayes, right? Like, Coots lifts everybody up basically. So it's interesting because it's, you know, if you put TK on the top line, what does that look like for TK, right? Like, he had a 65-point season, I think it was 2 years ago. Can he put up more points? Can he score more goals with Coots than he would with Hayes? If the answer is yes, I'd put him with Coots easily, because then you have Hayes and you have Atkinson, who apparently have some kind of relationship and some kind of, you would assume, chemistry or whatnot. And I'm not sure who you stick on the left side with them, because I think Hayes and JVR is not a great pair there.
Farabee.
Oh, there you go, Farabee.
Somebody's got to slide over from the right side to the left.
Yeah, and I mean, you can mix these guys up, but like, it's who plays that top line. And like Farabee, I like him with Hayes, but like, he was our best winger last year. So like, does he deserve, you know, a shot? You know, it's just my whole point is we have a new player who is very capable of scoring a lot of goals, and everybody's so quick to just throw Konechny up there.
I think it has something to do with like age and how long he's been with the team. And I think this all gets sorted out in camp, obviously. I really do think this, like, the opening night roster is going to be determined through camp and preseason. That's obvious. One of my bigger concerns that nobody wants to talk about, nobody seems to mention at all, is Kevin Hayes getting abdominal surgery. We've seen what it did to Giroux.
I mean, it's tough. I think every player is different. You're not wrong. Did he officially go under the knife? As much recovery time as possible, because Giroux did have a down year. But from what I remember, he was still injured or whatever he had said. If Hayes makes I don't know what the timetable on the recovery for something like that is. And considering the money he makes, yeah, that definitely could be an issue. I have to do more research on that. Honestly, you're right. I wasn't even thinking of that, because everything we'd heard is like, Yandle and Hayes are best buds, and this is going to be an amazing locker room. And I honestly hadn't popped into my head. I'm just assuming everybody's going to be ready to go at the start. I'll definitely do some more research on that and see what that is. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on for sure. But then again, going by last year, how much did we really rely on Hayes? Yes.
He was hurt.
Yes. We want to. Yeah, and you're right. And that's, if he's healthy and better, please, by all means. But I think when we look at his play last year, even hurt, and we're saying he might be hurt this year, we're going to lean on some other guys a little bit more. And I still think that they're a playoff team, being that considered. And hopefully he either heals up or figures it out, or one or the other.
Jack, did you find it interesting that Dave mentioned the Flyers were still in on Tarasenko up until last week? I mean, not that he said that they're not in on him anymore, but he's just not seeing any more smoke. He's not hearing anything from anybody. It's, you know, things have gone kind of quiet as far as Tarasenko. But up until last week, they were still trying to acquire him.
So my read on Tarasenko are two things.
Tarasenko and Einhorn.
Finkel.
Einhorn and Tarasenko.
And it's been a long time, guys. But we have a new player to our bot names team. And he sounds like a first line winger to me. Tarasenko are two things. With the Flyers, they went with Atkinson. Yeah, they're still interested because he needs to be moved out of St. Louis, and he's good. You know, theoretically, I don't know how they make it work, but from St. Louis's perspective, I think part of the reason they haven't moved him, and I know they're different positions, but I know this is star power wise. They kind of look at it this way. They feel that whoever misses out when Eichel is finally moved may pivot to Tarasenko as a fallback option. So unless they are blown away with the deal, they're going to hold off.
It's possible.
I know he's a winger.
They absolutely botched trading Tarasenko by asking way too much for the guy.
And I think they asked way too much because that was their thought process. But I think at the end of the day, when a deal does get made, I think you're going to be right. I think we're all going to say they probably could have gotten more.
I'm betting that after the trade's all said and done, you're going to find out that there was other offers with more on the table.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And it was probably around the Kraken draft time, like right around there in the NHL draft and all that. And, you know, you're gambling. I know he's Doug Armstrong has frustrated a couple of GMs, Fletcher in particularly. You see how easy the Cam Atkinson deal came together. Time will tell. I mean, I'm still super curious what the hell's going on with Eichel, him releasing that statement about how she should have been traded by now. And Buffalo is just an absolute, the more I see them botch this Eichel situation, the more faith I suddenly have in Ristolainen. Even if it's just a hair, you just see what a dumpster fire they are up there. And it's like, how could you thrive in that environment? I don't know.
So I just put two lineups together just for the hell of conversation here. And both lineups I have, it just feels like something is still missing. There's like one piece to make it all make sense that's not quite there yet. And I'm going to just toss one of them at you guys real quick. There's one recurring theme, though, before I give you the lineup, that each line has players that can play defensive hockey, right? At least two on three of the four. So I'll just give you this one. Tell me what you think. You're going to hate it right away. First line, Oscar Lindblom, Sean Couturier, Travis Konecny. Second line, Scott Laughton, Kevin Hayes, Cam Atkinson. Third line, JVR, Giroux, Morgan Frost. Fourth line, Knack, Lazinski, Allison, and, you know, Thompson's your fifth center. Something's missing, right?
When you named a player for a line.
Farabee's not even on there. I didn't even put Joel Farabee on this list.
Yeah, like, that's pretty bad.
Something has to move here. Did you have Morgan Frost at
wing? Who the hell is Joel Farabee?
Yeah, I didn't even. There has to be some kind of move here because something doesn't. There's just too much.
I think it's. Let's go over it real quick, just off the top of my head. I think the first line. I don't know if they're going to move G back to center. So let's just say they don't. I think it's going to be G, Couturier. We'll say TK because everybody's saying that. Farabee, Hayes at center, obviously. I'll say Atkinson. And then third line, Laughton, Allison, JVR. And then you got Lazinski, Lindblom, and who am I missing?
Aubé Kubel.
So I guess Lazinski's your center. Aubé Kubel, you know, and then Thompson's your
that's the thing, right? So you have – So you're playing your fourth line, and
you paid Lindblom three mil, right? Yep. 3 mil to play.
It's actually a pretty good deal. Yeah, but I heard he might start there until he starts to return to form and move up in the lineup. And doesn't it feel like they need to move a winger for something?
Yes, it still feels like they need to move another winger. But they, you know, that's why I kind of mentioned the Tarasenko thing, because as much as that would be nice, it doesn't really make sense to me that they would be. You know, I would assume flipping, let's say, a JVR for Tarasenko, it doesn't make any sense.
No, they got to give. Yeah, you're right. I even if they move G back to center, let's say you put JVR on the top line, Coots, JVR, TK, Hayes, Farabee, Atkinson, then your third line would be G.
There's like too many pieces to the puzzle.
The wingers are like. I want to see a lot because you got Lindblom and
G, Allison.
Allison. And it's like, I mean, theoretically, we could, if Morgan Frost, you know, starts to push, that could change things. Like, there feels like there just needs to be one more trade.
Yeah, it does.
And I would love it if we gave up two pieces for one, you know, and I just don't know what it would be. And a winger really doesn't make sense. I don't know what the deals would be. It could be so lopsided that suddenly there isn't, you know, a need at wing. But I mean, you can't theoretically see them trading for another defenseman. They're not trading for any kind of goalie, even backup. It has to be center. Like, that is the only thing they could be looking at. Even bringing in somebody, say they made it work and they signed Allison and Hart. Anaheim and Hart, and they signed Bozak. Even then, I'm like, well, how you're gonna have like two guys out of the lineup? It's not the worst thing in the world, but I don't know. It's a lot going on there. It's a logjam. I feel like they got to move something.
Okay, I mean, it's not the worst thing. If we have learned anything on HW Radio, it's that lineups on paper mean jack shit.
Yeah, it's true.
Injuries. You know, no, it's. I've brought this up before.
There's injuries, man.
100% right. He's 100% right. And it gotten to the point where coaches, or I've heard, they don't even like lines. They like pairs. Mm-hmm. They like Drew and Coots together. They like Hayes and Farabee together. And they just insert the next guy, and it's a puzzle, a constantly changing puzzle based on who's hot, who's not. And I'm okay with that. It's because, you know, the lines only make sense in NHL. That's the only time they really stay the same, when you're playing the video game. But in real life, we see a guy on the third line one day, first line the next two, and then on the fourth day. Like, it's just insane. As long as they win, I could give a shit. And the way we deploy the lines, you know, anyway, he could be listed on the third line, but if they're playing good, like Wade Allison at the end of the year, by the end of the game, he's got as much ice time as the guys on the first line. So I really don't care. As long as they can find chemistry, I don't care who's labeled for whose line, and just make it happen, you know? And as far as wings and centers.
Another thing I'm curious about is I wonder how many times this year we're going to see 7D. So we talk about more in slip seating in and out, but against these bigger, tougher teams, what's the likelihood of going seven defensemen and a guy like Kubel scratched?
I don't know. We're going to see.
That stems from this issue. Like I think a lot of that will have to do with Morgan Frost, honestly.
Like the forwards they're not ready to play teams like the Islanders, like the Capitals, you know? So to play 7D, I mean, I get the point and it makes sense, but is it something that you want to do as a team? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It just feels like now you're catering to the other team because you didn't address this issue in the offseason.
Exactly.
You know? So you're letting them dictate what roster you're going to put out already. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels like you're already playing from behind. Like I don't like right. that. You got to be ahead of the game. Make them play your game.
Yeah, they need to. I think they need to go out and get another guy or two. I don't know how it's going to happen. Here's a question for you guys before we move on to a little bit of Risto talk. If Joel Farabee is involved in a trade for Jack Eichel, who let's say doesn't play for at least 3-4 months of the season, obviously the package is bigger than just Joel Farabee. I don't know what else it is, but would you do that? Would you do that trade?
100 times.
I'm indifferent towards it.
100 times out of 100.
I don't trust Jack Eichel's neck.
That's fair, but franchise. Borderline generational.
And how do you afford them?
I mean, yeah, that's true. So I guess JVR has to evolve. That's realistically
contracts up at the end of this year. Giroux's contracts up at the end of this year.
You didn't say anything about money, Jim. You just said deals. Yeah, evolve. Just
if Farabee's, because I'm trying to find a way to get rid of a winger, and obviously I would assume Farabee, TK, are two of the more attractive players for a team like Buffalo. So I just thrown out
just theoretically thinking, I know it probably doesn't work financially unless JVR is somehow involved. And I love JVR, especially on that power play. It's just, he has the largest contract out of the wingers, the true wingers. And it's kind of like for a guy like Michael, I think these guys don't become available that often. If Buffalo were to bite and eventually just take a deal like that and you need a center, you imagine having Coots as your second line center. Eichel is your one. Hayes is your three. It's a lot of money at center. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, holy cow, what that would do for this team.
If you look at Buffalo, they have two young supposedly stud centers coming up in Mittelstadt and Cousins.
So, they'll ruin them.
they absolutely will. Yeah,
well, Mittelstadt's already shaky. Yeah, Cousins, I think, is going to be good.
This Buffalo GM, he's new, right? He's brand new. Do you guys know off the top of your head?
I don't know. Don't they change him every year?
I mean, Kyle's point. I get confused with the GM and the coach because they're so interchangeable. The guy who drafted Eichel, I think, was like 2 or 3 GMs ago. You know, so Craig Adams, thank you. But where he is in the list of recent GMs, I'm not sure. I think it is. I think he is new because they were talking about, yes, he is new because they were talking about bringing him in and having a draft of this, not of this caliber, but how many picks they were going to have and how high they're going to be drafting and not being prepared for it. You're bringing in a new front office, and this is a big offseason for you, trading Eichel, all those draft picks, and you're cleaning the deck, and these guys are just going to be rearranging the furniture in their office, and they have major decisions to make around the corner, which is so Buffalo. It's such a Buffalo thing to do. The night of the draft, there's just redo everything, you know what I mean? So yeah, I have no faith. I think he's asking a ton because he not necessarily knows what to do. And he has to be moved when he should have been because they're a cluster. You know what?
Real big answer here to our buddy Chris. It's not Craig Adams, all right? It's Kevin Adams.
Whatever. Craig's you know, cousin. It's not Lou Lamoriello. It's not Joe Sakic. It's not not Brendan Shanahan. It's none of the Kyle Dubas. It's none of these guys that, you know, win.
Kyle Dubas wins? When did Kyle Dubas win anything? Yeah,
ooh, he made the playoffs.
They made the playoffs a lot since 2005 and haven't got out of the first freaking round.
This is his first year as GM.
yeah, GM since June 16, 2020. So I guess last year was his first.
Oh, last year. Okay. Season. I do think they changed their entire scouting office or something.
Change or did they leave? They were like, we can't do this anymore.
Hard to tell at this point. I don't think they checked the door anymore.
So my point was, I think he's having an okay offseason as GM of the Sabres, unloading Reinhart, unloading Rista Line, and he got decent assets back, whatnot.
That's true.
Whatnot. So, you know, maybe we're seeing something different in Buffalo. Maybe he looks at Mittelstadt and Cousins, and he goes, hey, if I can surround these guys with decent wingers, that'll do it, you know. We'll see. I don't think it's going to happen. Just wanted to throw out a theoretical question for you guys. All right. Anyways, let's move on. Speaking of Rasmus Ristolainen, already the BS is starting on Twitter. I'm sure you guys saw it.
Oh, I see it. I see all of it.
Go ahead. Tell us about it.
I just choose not to respond to your bullshit.
But if you could respond, what would you say?
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
You thought about not cursing.
And then you repeated it. This requires a curse word here. Shut up.
It does.
Shut up.
I don't know.
Stop giving me metrics on a team that has been a bottom feeder now since Risto's been in the league. Team's never been good. Stop. I'm done hearing about how their third pairing metrics were better than Ristolainen's. Well, yeah, they're playing 10 minutes a game. No shit.
So I guess for me, the big question comes down to, why did a decent amount of GMs want to move first round picks as a part of a package? A couple of these GMs, supposedly playoff teams,
because they know nothing, add a player Jack.
Like Ristolainen, but they're GMs in the NHL. They, most of them theoretically, have seen success. They know how to win in the league, and I'm sure they have an analytic department. At least some of them have to, because I'm pretty sure the entire league does to some extent, whether they're fully into it or they just kind of have a office in a corner somewhere. I'm sure they have an analytical department. So why does it really seem like the GMs in the league are completely opposite from this analytical crowd? Like, why is there such a disconnect from the people who actually run the teams in this crowd? That's what I can't understand, because they have to be under the same umbrella on some aspect of this. And it's got to be more than just grit. So are we putting all our eggs in the basket that Buffalo was a true dumpster fire? Or is analytics that bad and they can be used everywhere? Because I can't toe the line. It just doesn't make sense to me that these two different powers are at such odds. We're being told by some that he's not even an NHL caliber defenseman, which we all know is BS. He's been compared to Andrew McDonald more times than I'd like to remember. And that is incredibly dramatic. If you actually remember watching Andrew McDonald play, like, no, like, really think about it. Like, come on, that's idiotic. But like, for these guys who win or are GMs of teams making millions and millions of dollars, running an organization like this, most of them successful at their playoff teams, it's going to be at complete odds with this analytic crowd. Like, there's something's missing here. And that's what I don't get involved. I just kind of watch from a distance. I have my own personal feelings. I think he'll be pretty good on that second pairing. We'll see. I'm going to like his grit. But like, wow, is there – I haven't seen the fan base more divided since what?
Shane Gostisbehere.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think towards the end of his tenure, we all kind of knew what the answer to that was. And then the trade was the ultimate cherry on the cake when you see him get traded with a second and a seventh. Yes, I know the flat cap had something to do with that, but come on. Like, he had almost
zero. He had negative value.
Yeah, exactly. He
had negative value.
And look, so here's the way I look at it. And his analytics were good. The ones we looked at, the offensive ones, not the defensive ones, but it's just, I can't grasp how there's such a divide from these really smart analytic people who watch the laptop as much as they do the games, theoretically, and the GMs who run the teams.
Well, it's not just the GMs. You if you go on Twitter, I mean, there is a pretty good Flyers base of fans on Twitter. Don't go on Facebook because it is just a dumpster fire of crappy opinions. But if you go on Twitter, you have the analytics crowd, right? And then you have the crowd that has been commentating on the Flyers for 10 plus years now. You take the guys' opinions that have been watching the game, that have been at the game, that watch with their eyes, not their computer screen, and what are they saying? They're saying he's going to be fine here. They're saying in a reduced role, on a second pair, Ristolainen's going to be good. That's who I'm listening to at this point. I'm listening to the people who watch the damn thing. I mean, how many F-bombs did Martinez drop the other day?
Yeah,
that's a guy I trust his hockey opinion. I don't trust some 20-year-old kid with a computer with a bunch of heat maps on it. I'm sorry. It doesn't make any goddamn sense. I watch plenty of crap. Watch plenty of crap hockey over the years. I watch plenty of good hockey over the years. I know what is and what isn't, and your heat map shows me nothing.
So before I go again, I want to hear Jim's thoughts on this, because I know Jim isn't the biggest Risto guy.
Well, I just want to say, first and foremost, do not take this bait. Thank you, Chris, for that comment. Nobody comment on that, because we don't know if it's true.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So just from eye test, you know, from what I've watched of Ristolainen, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I've watched Buffalo Sabres games. They're the team that I have the, you know, one of the more, or at least I should say, least interest in the NHL. Right? They're a dumpster fire for how many years? I'll watch them when they play the Flyers, and that's the only time I've watched Ristolainen play, really. And he looks like he does well against the Flyers. Having said that, a lot of players did well against the Flyers. If as long as they were big and, you know, physical and intimidating, you probably played well against the Flyers last season. Having said that, I like big physical players that can play that brand of hockey. I'm glad they brought a guy in that can play like that. I think where I have to separate is I had this ideal kind of player that I wanted to play along side Travis Sanheim, right? And they didn't go out and get that guy. And for reasons that are coming out now, we're learning, Savard, you know, wanted to play in Montreal. He's from the area. That's why he signed the cheaper deal. Larson, I'm not sure what the hell happened with that, but, you know, apparently he wanted to play for Seattle. Otherwise, he would have signed somewhere else for more money, you would assume. Ristolainen seems excited to be here. He seems excited for the new opportunity. You have to think, you know, being excited to play somewhere new for a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, maybe he just started shutting people out in Buffalo, you know? Maybe it's like another coach. I forget. Who was I listening to? Was it Mertidis that was talking like that on the Bright Side, actually? That was saying, yeah, every year it's like another mom, you know? After a while, it's like, yeah, just shut up. You know, you're not my real mom. It's going to be a different one next year. You know what I mean?
You're
going to be
a real dad.
Yeah, that's what he said, though. There's going to be a different dad next year. What do I got to listen to you for?
Yeah, the revolving door of coaches. Absolutely. How could you, like, really tune in to somebody you know is not going to be there?
This was my point the last episode that we were on together, is how are you supposed to develop as an NHL defenseman when every year you're being pulled in a different direction?
Right.
True. Everybody has this great grand idea on how you should develop, but meanwhile, you're still playing freaking 30 minutes a night almost.
So one question I did ask Charlie that wasn't really answered. It was a lot of Risto's been the worst, no matter who his partner's been. And when they changed him around, Risto's been pretty bad. I brought up Dahlin and how when he was drafted number one overall, the word generational, I think that does get tossed around a little too easily now, but it was flirted with his name, which means at the very least he should be some kind of franchise defenseman. And he severely struggled up there. You know, and is that a player of his caliber? Is that just another swing and miss, and it just so happens to be Buffalo, or is there a legitimate problem up there? I mean, is that not an eyebrow raiser?
I'm leaning towards legitimate problem. I mean, people can't get out of there fast enough. Everybody, it seems, wants to get out of Buffalo. There's not an analytical reason behind that other than the freaking the franchise is a dumpster fire.
I mean, I'm trying to remember what draft that was. So if I say the incorrect player, correct me. But like the other players drafted after Dahlin, I believe, were Shmestikov for Carolina. Looks pretty damn good. Matt, was it Brady Tkachuk? Pretty damn good. Who else was drafted in that draft? Like, I feel like everybody but Dahlin has been pretty successful.
I hate that I'm the only
one. I was right. Kotkaniemi for Montreal, pretty good. Quinn Hughes, defenseman, Vancouver, pretty damn good. You know, a couple other guys, Noah Dobson, the Islanders, Joel Farabee, Flyers. Like, there's plenty of players came out of that draft that were good. It wasn't a bad draft or anything like that. And the guy at the top of the list, far and away, he's the number one pick. I don't think he's not an NHL player or anything, but he's nowhere near how good they thought he'd be. And it's been how many years now? It was 2018 draft. We're going into 2021, 22.
You know, I kind of get this feeling with Buffalo. Well, you know, they just unloaded Reinhart. They got Dahlin. They just got rid of Risto. Who else did they lose this year? They're about to lose Jack Eichel.
Jake McCabe's
a little older, right?
Yeah,
a little older than these guys, I believe.
But, I mean, who's their goalie, right? I mean, they lost Olmar. He's probably one of the better goalies they had since Langer.
You know who it reminds me of, kind of? The Philadelphia Flyers of old. You bring a kid in, he underperforms a bit, you trade him, he goes wins a cup.
Yeah. I think it's worse in Buffalo, but I get the point.
Jake McCabe is 27 for whatever that's worth. Oh, big boy.
I thought he was like 40.
204.
Wow.
I didn't know a lot about Jake McCabe, but
that's more interesting. Where'd he come from?
Brandon Montour.
Anaheim? Montour. Montour came from Anaheim. He was pretty good in Anaheim. Horrible. Buffalo sucked. He's good in Florida. I'm not saying he's great, but like you see, he's played for these different teams and where he was good and where he wasn't. I mean, but come on. Also, there's smoke, there's fire.
Nobody's pretending Brandon Montour is a top four defenseman.
Right. Right. And he, by far, his worst years, Buffalo.
Yep. By far.
Can we debunk something real quick here? And, you know, I figure this is something that I was kind of trying to figure out myself, but maybe you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or not. So when we talk about guys who analytically are not great, their puck possession metrics are not great and whatnot, it automatically means that they must be a bad player, right? If they have a high amount of blocked shots and a high amount of hits, it must mean it's because they're not, you know, they don't have the puck, right? They're getting worked. That's what people say. Is that necessarily true? Can you guys, does that sound right? Because I get it. It makes sense. But for whatever reason, whenever I see that, I have an issue with it. And yesterday was the first time I actually took time to think about it because I'm sure it was going to be some, you know, it was just some asinine thing and I don't want to waste time out of my life to figure it out. Yesterday I had a couple minutes and I'm like, why does this bother me? Why does it bother me when people say this guy has a high amount of hits and a high amount of blocked shots must mean he's getting worked and never has the puck? I have a problem with that because I just don't believe that it's true. What do you guys think?
I don't believe that for a second. I think there's too many different things that can variables that can happen in the game that lead to situations of that nature. Right. I think certain guys like Felipe Myers, had he not tried to pinch when he shouldn't have and just resulted to, I'm going to play D, you know, I'm going to stay back, he would have had more hits and more block shots. But he went for the home run play and more times than not missed, and he doesn't get a hit or a block shot, but he also doesn't have the puck. But that does that pop up on his stats? No. And it just gets made that he was out of position. He's made out of position. He's a young guy. He'll come around, whatever. But like guys who think defense first are right. going to have more hits and right. going to block more shots.
And that was going to be my next question there. When you mentioned Phil Myers, it was, well, what kind of defenseman is Phil Myers? Is he a puck? Is he supposed to be a puck possession, a play pusher, or is he supposed to be a defense first, you know, grind guys out along the boards, blocking shots. What do you want Phil Myers primarily doing? Of course, you want him to do all of it. But primarily, when you think of Phil Myers, what do you think of? In my opinion, I think of puck possession guy. And if you're a puck possession guy, you're going to give it away more times because you have possession of the puck more. I understand that, right? Kyle, go ahead. What were you going to say there?
I wasn't going to say anything. What are you talking about?
Sorry. I thought I heard somebody say something. Sorry. I wasn't looking at the screen. So I guess listening to Jack there, it brought me on to my next kind of thing. There's not every player's cookie cutter, right? Not every player is a puck possession type player. That's why we have offensive defensemen, and that's why we have defensive defensemen. Defensive defensemen are not the best puck possession players. Otherwise, they would be puck possession offensive. You know what I mean? Do you get what I'm saying? There are some players who succeed. Their, you know, number one attribute is blocking shots. Because guess what? Not all these puck possession guys want to do that. Right? So someone has to do it. Someone's got to put their body on the line. Like, how come there's never an argument, man, these puck possession guys, their blocked shots are really low. Guess what that means? That means a lot of shots are getting through to your goaltender, and you don't want that. Right? So it's just another it shows you how analytics, you can kind of bend them to just prove your shitty points. And that bothers me.
That's my thing. You can bend the analytics. You can change the number. No, not change the numbers. You could take a number and tell any story you'd like. Like, let's look at Shane Gostisbehere bear. Probably not a lot of block shots, right? It's kind of hard to block a shot when you're at the opposing team's blue line. You pass the puck across and it's a breakaway the other way. So I don't know how you're supposed to fly in front of him and to block a shot. You know, and what's that? What you have a one takeaway or giveaway, rather, is all you get on your stats. I mean, that doesn't really affect your underlining numbers when it comes to analytics, especially the way they break them down. When you'd rather shit on a Seth Jones because he forced a guy to the outside boards, he ends up taking an extremely low percentage shot that does count as a shot, or it gets blocked. Oh, well, he got a blocked shot, so it doesn't count. No, actually, he did what he was supposed to do and forced the guy to the outside. The guy had no play, took an extremely low percentage shot that either missed the net, was an easy save, or got blocked. But, you know, that analytics doesn't say that. It just says block shot or he didn't have the puck.
Yeah. So I guess my point is, when you're going to judge a player, it's like you have to judge them on the type of player that they are, if that makes sense. Right? If you're going to judge
that.
Go ahead.
You got to judge them by who's on the line with them, who's playing right with them. You got to judge them by, okay, at this point in the game, was it a defensive zone start? At this point in the game, was he out there for an icing? Is he exhausted? Right. There's so much crap that goes into it that just get completely skipped over just because heat maps and numbers on a calculator. And
right. We're going to have to like dedicate a couple episodes just to let off steam. Because when I get going about analytics, and I wanted to get going about it last night, well, in case you missed it, I just didn't have it in me. And now that we're talking about it, I feel the fire just bubbling up in me, because it's just, it bothers me because it doesn't paint the truth. It's like you're spreading a lie. Like you're spreading an agenda that you want to spread about a specific player. Right. And
that's what
it irks me.
It's an agenda. And so many people have them. It's an agenda. It's when you're too close to the certain players and the team. I mean, it forms an opinion, and then you bend the numbers to fit that opinion, not the other way around. And that's the problem. And it's very easy to do that with these equations that are made up. Sure, is there some truth to them? Theoretically, at their core, yeah. But does it really tell you the true story? If they were robots, literal robots, maybe. But they're human. They're human beings. There's variables. There's all sorts of things that go through the entire thing. And that's why analytics have never won anything. They're just a nice tool. So to be a slave to them, and if I were a GM, I'd have it a whole department. I'd want every potential get over the other team that I could get. Like, really, I would want every chance, but right, I'm not going to be married to just one thing. Yep. And that's what drives me nuts. When I see a trade like this and they hate on it that way, and they almost throw everything out the window. And I could not believe that McDonald got brought up. That to me is still like, did you completely forget how he played the game? Do you completely forget my rants, our rants of him literally just falling? I know there's that one gif of Ristolainen hitting the boards or whatever, but like that was, you could tell he didn't know, realize where he was on the ice and just kind of bounced. That's like one play.
The first season we did this, no lie, I think Jack had a rant about Andy McDonald every single night. And then I wonder when there's going to be a time when we're just going to forget about Andrew McDonald. And that time I think was like last season, maybe like half of the season before. And he's back. He just can't go away, this frigging guy. People are comparing Rasmus Ristolainen, a guy they just traded a first round pick for, to Andrew McDonald. That just makes me laugh a little bit. He's just never going to go away.
You really think that NHL GMs were offering the Flyers first round picks for Andrew McDonald?
Because he makes less money.
He makes less money than Ristolainen. You know, I mean, like, no.
I'm sure you could find, this is the problem with analytics that bothers the hell out of me, is I'm sure you could find a bunch of analytics that supports your argument that Andrew McDonald was a better defenseman than Rasmus Ristolainen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure I could find one that says he was a better defenseman than Chris Pronger. I'm sure I could find it. You know, he had a lot of block shots. I mean, the dude would.
It's disingenuous.
It is.
Dude, perfect word. Yes, it is. And the dude would, he would literally just fall in the most important situations, just collapse. I've never seen an analytic for I suddenly fell, or snow angel analytic. I've never seen that. You know what I mean? And to compare the two players is idiotic. I get you want to make a point, but you cross the line with like disingenuous is a good word. You're completely disingenuous.
You have a platform.
Or clickbait.
Yeah, another big issue I have with this whole analytics debate is because I do feel like this analytics debate has really been fueled over Shane Gostisbehere, because you're talking about a guy who doesn't have horrible analytics on paper. His analytics are pretty good. Yeah, his analytics are pretty good. But everybody fell in love with Shane Gostisbehere's rookie season, myself included. I mean, how could you not? It was a Cinderella story. It was beautiful. Who didn't like that, right? The year after. All right, we may have something serious here. They gave him a big contract. Everybody was expecting the world. Some people, I will not name names, some people still can't get over the fact that the dude fell off a cliff. The guy had everything. The league figured him out in two seasons, and he was incapable of reproducing the seasons that he had in his first 2 years. At that point, right there, just the eye test alone, F your analytics, throw them out the freaking window. Just the eye test alone should tell you this player is not worth $4.5 million. He's not, right? But some people are still pushing the idea that because his analytics are good, he's a good player and deserves to be in the lineup. But and then they come out and go, well, only if he's in the right positions, only if you use him correctly.
How
only,
convenient.
But he plays defense. Like, how you convenient. Use him. Like, I'm like, come on, guys. Like, this is unbelievable.
Kyle, that was a great parallel right there, because it's funny how they'll use that argument for guys that they like, right? Like Shane Gostisbehere. But you know, you have a player just acquired that's played in Buffalo for his entire career. And before he even touches the ice in Philadelphia, he's worse than Andrew McDonald. It doesn't make sense.
I do find it funny.
Hypocrites, man. The biggest hypocrites in the game.
Just to piggyback that, what was the other defenseman the Flyers were interested in getting earlier in the offseason? Didn't quite work. Seth Jones, remember that guy? Did I not read an article that said he plays defense like Andrew McDonald because of his analytics? Is he a go-to name for the analytic crowd to not like? If their analytics aren't good, they're Andrew McDonald. Twice in one offseason with two big defensemen, I've seen that. Unbelievable.
Great point. Go ahead, Kyle. Sorry.
The videos in the I assume we're talking about the same article. the videos of this article. Oh, Seth Jones backs up on the blue line like Andrew McDonald does. I'm like, yeah, he does. But you know what he also does is he forces you to the boards. He doesn't allow you into the slot. That's playing defense.
And he stays
that
on
is
his feet.
Literally defense.
Yeah, and he's still standing.
Where'd you go, Jim?
I mean, yeah, and he's still standing, which McDonald had a serious struggle of. It's juicy. It's clickbait to get you to read into the analytics and believe it. Like, if I didn't know any better, it's like, what do you mean he plays like Andrew McDonald? That guy was really bad. I would click the article, and I would read into it, and I would assume that this – and Dan Knightley says it here. How do we know these analytics are legit? Is anybody checking the work? I kind of alluded to that earlier. I'm like, I don't know what these numbers are truly based off of.
I don't even know how to check.
Yeah, I mean, I just assume based on the X, Y, Z that they make sense and it's good, but I've never seen that win anything. So while I do want to know if a guy is taking shots from a low percentage area and that needs to change, or if we're successful here but not there, yes, I do like analytics for certain aspects of the game, but I definitely don't like it for every little thing. When I can see with my eyes that a guy like Ghost can't play defense, where he gives the puck up right in front of his own net, where he has literal no board play because he's so friggin' small and gets pushed around, like, he's an offensive guy and that's it. I mean, he would be a great lacrosse player, because the second he come back on defense, he'd go to the bench. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, like, he is useless on D. I think the trade showed us that. And I think the trade for Solana showed us that he has more to his game than we realize. And analytics, they're going to have to take a back seat to this one for now.
I'm betting the under on that all day long.
Yeah, me too.
I'll take 50 bucks on the under.
When's the last time he had over 50? When's the last time he had over 50?
3 years ago, 4 years ago now.
I'm going to look that up.
The last time he scored 65. I think he only maybe scored over 50 points once, to be honest with you. Was it twice?
Let me see.
Real quick to piggyback off of that bet, who scores more points this year, Ristolainen or Gostisbehere?
That's hard.
That's a good one, right?
How many 40-point seasons did Ristolainen have again?
I think maybe
like four.
Five or six. Four?
Ghost has had two. One was 46, one was 65. He came close in 16-17 with 39. To answer our question, his only two good seasons, which we all recognize, were his rookie season and his 65-point season. Other than that, he has hit 37, 12, 20, and 39. So the over-under for him to get 50, I'm definitely taking that under, because he's only ever done it once when he had 65.
The only thing that may play into his ability to get 50 with Arizona is the West Coast may not have the book on him.
That is more open style hockey. Yeah.
He may get 50 in Arizona just because those teams aren't used to playing Ghost. The East Coast figured him out in two seasons.
I don't know. Phoenix is going to be pretty rough this year. So I don't know. Maybe if he plays the entire game. Yeah, there you go. They're moving on. So I guess. I mean, you look at the deal. The GM made it because, remember, the Coyotes didn't have a first round pick this year because of some BS they did last year. So accumulating draft picks was what they needed to do. So taking on a contract like Ghost during a rebuild transition year makes sense for them. They didn't do it because they thought Ghost was going to do anything for them. They're a trash team.
I agree.
Buffalo,
it is going to be interesting.
The Flyers and other playoff teams inquired about Ristolainen because they felt that he can help make them a better team, a better playoff team. The Coyotes took Shane Gostisbehere at the price they did because they're rebuilding. They're just going to let him rot his contract out. He's not going to do anything for them. He's not going to put them in the playoffs. He's going to golf more than he plays hockey.
Yep. Perfect player for the casual fan. And that's what they are down in Arizona. And I hope there's no Arizona fans watching, because they're going to be pissed. But yeah,
I'd be shocked.
If you like watching spinoramas and the occasional very nice goal, then you'll probably like Shane Gostisbehere. If you like watching winning hockey, then you're not going to be very happy with Ghost.
We're going to get an uptick in viewership from Arizona this year when the term high and wide is used as much as it is.
That's true. I forgot. All of our free advertising went out the window with Ghost.
Yeah, that's
going to suck. A second, a seventh inning of free advertising went.
Yep.
Damn it. So last on our list here, we're about an hour and 5 minutes into the show, guys, was Travis Sanheim's arbitration. Since we went a little bit overtime here, instead of getting into a huge conversation, why don't we do this? What do you think? We'll start with Kyle. What do you think he gets? How long of a contract, and what's his average value?
I'm going to go 2x4, well, or 1x4 since it's arbitration, right? It's only a one-year contract.
So you think it's actually going to get to that point and it's going to be 1 year, $4
million? I think so, or they're going to be able to get him for two or three at four. But I don't think at this point he's going to come in less than four, solely because his agent is saying, yeah, he had a down year. So did the entire team. You're expecting this guy to play second pair minutes and not pay him as a second pair defenseman, and we're not having it. That's why it's going to arbitration, I think. And the arbitrator's obviously going to go, yeah, he is playing second pair minutes. Yeah, he has been in the NHL for X amount of years. $4 million.
Pay the man. All right.
I mean, I don't know what Jack, the years will be if it goes to arbitration. If it does, it's automatic 1 year. Then
if
I think
the arbitrator decides it's 1 year.
I'll say one at 3.75. If they do come to a deal, I think they would buy at least one unrestricted free agent year. So I'll say three at like four, or three at 4.25, just to buy that unrestricted free agent year. I don't even think four at 4.25 or maybe slightly higher. I could see that as well, just to buy those unrestricted free agent years, just two of them. It's a decent payday, and he could still cash in when he's 25 this year. So he'd be 29. You can definitely cash in. So yeah. So 2 years of restricted, 2 years of unrestricted, or one right around that range. Otherwise I don't see what the holdup is. If it does go to arbitration, it's not going to look good. But if I were Sanheim, I'd want a 1 year deal. You know, I would want a 1 year deal to cash in, for next year and to bounce back. But a 3 or 4 year deal is not out of the question, because he'd be roughly 30 years old. As a defenseman, you can cash in.
It is interesting, isn't it? You know, our buddy Chris over here mentioned he needs 2 years to be a UFA, and the flat cap ends presumably in 2 years. We already went through one. They, you know, in the beginning, this is number that's continues to stick out of my mind. 3 years with the flat cap, could be longer, but I'm going to stick with three. If that's the case, and I'm Travis Sanheim, I'm asking for a 2 year contract, because I know that the Flyers can't pay me what I want right now with the cap, right? They got to sign the franchise goalie, hopefully, in Carter Hart. They want to go out and get at least, let's say, one more player with whatever's left. I'm going to ask for another bridge, and I'm going to ask for a raise. So whatever that raise is, and 2 seasons, then in 2 years, I'm getting paid. I'm going to be in the middle of my prime. I'll ask for a 4 or 5 year deal. That'll take me till I'm 30, 31, 32. I'm asking for another contract there. Boom. That's how it's going to work. I'm going to assume they're getting caught up on the number here. I'm assuming he wants at least four, because he's playing second pair minutes. Provorov in his first contract got, you know, six, whatever. He's playing with a guy that's making 5.2, 5.4. He's going to be, you know, the fourth lowest paid guy out of the top four. And if he accepts under four, it's going to be significantly. So, you know, he's got an argument. Do I agree with it? Not really, because I don't think he's worth more than four yet, you know. It would be very team friendly if he took a 2 year deal in the 3.75, $4 million range. And I'd be okay with that. That's what I'm going to guess happens. And I think it would be smart for him to, you know, get that extra year instead of going for more money now, because then it takes him to UFA status and potentially a bigger payday, you know, if he plays up to more of his potential. Because let's face it, we haven't seen a consistent Travis Sanheim yet, consistently good. we've seen spurts of, whoa, this guy can be really good. But for the most part, we've kind of just seen, like, you know, not that great yet. He's just kind of out there. So
he's a guy.
He's a guy. And is he a guy that deserves a significant raise? No, not in my mind.
How? Just how? Like, that's what drives me nuts. Like, it's a results-based business. And did he play second line minutes? Yeah. Well, how did it result? It was a dumpster fire. It was horrible. It wasn't all his fault, but it had a lot to do with him too. Like, we can't just let him skate here. Like, he definitely, the idea that they have to get a raise is straight up potential. He's getting older. It's another year under his belt. He was first round pick. Fine. What did he make last year? 3.25? All right, so 3.5, 3.75, depending if he wants a one or two, I'm okay with it. They have to go four. But anything more than that for a one- or two-year deal, walking him to unrestricted free agency is honestly ridiculous. And if they are that far apart, then they should let it go to an arbitrator, and he needs to have a better season next year, and then we'll go from there. And maybe we'll be out of the flat cap or at least 1 year closer to it. Now, if they are keeping that in mind, both camps, I guess that's possible. But I don't know. I feel like they wouldn't be that far apart if that were the case. I think they would have worked something out by now. And I just feel like, does he really believe? Like, look how good Couture was, and he signed that deal for 4.1 for 6 years or whatever the ridiculous contract he was, team-friendly contract it was. And he was good. He was actually good. All Sanheim did was show up for work every day. Now, yeah, he was better than Myers. He was better than most of the defense, but this whole defense was very bad. So it doesn't mean he was good by any means. So if he's getting a raise, it's a very slight raise. I can't see an arbitrator truly giving him that much of a raise. So if he wants to play chicken with the Flyers with this, I don't think he's going to get what he's looking for, and he's going to be on another prove-it deal. So if they're playing, if you want this, you're going to give us a couple years of unrestricted free agency then, and he might want to take
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Hopefully it gets resolved. I believe the arbitration date, I thought I saw August 11th. If that's wrong, somebody correct me. So we'll find out in about a week, right? And we will be back in a week. So having said that, guys, a lot of info, a lot of great discussion in this episode. Thank you to everyone hanging out in the comments. Always enjoy you guys, your questions, your comments, always good stuff. Our viewers are some of the smartest, most knowledgeable viewers, I will say. Thank you. Example right here. Thanks, Chris. August 11th, last day to negotiate. Okay. All right. So having said that, we're going to wrap up. What do you guys have to promote?
Tons of stuff. Guys, got to make sure you go and check out the Sheriff. We just had Britt Kleino on. She was a Olympic medalist with the USA ringette team, which I didn't even know what ringette was until we had her on. And it is a really cool sport. So I definitely got to go check that out. We're going to be dropped in Brandon Sugar Sugden Thursday. And then we got another double release of episodes next week for you guys.
I'm going to go Google what a ringette is now after this episode.
So it's a cool sport, dude. It's cool.
Jack, what do you got happening at Full Circle?
I thought it was one of the girls that holds up the sign. finally back with Full Circle. As all the Flyers moves went down, a lot of the Metro moves went down as well. But not forget, a lot of big moves, moving and shaking. Some guys we're going to see a lot in our division. It's going to be tight. And just check out what some of these other teams did, could do, and some of our early, way too early predictions.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode. For the podcast episode, guys, we're going to have the David Pagnotta interview connected to this. That's where we got all of our topics for this episode. If you can't wait for that to come out, feel free to go ahead and look it up on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. The interview with David Pagnotta is floating around there somewhere. Other than that, we'll be back next Tuesday with another episode, maybe with a guest, maybe not. Maybe it'll just be us again. We got another In Case You Missed It coming up later this week, tomorrow actually. And a Bright Side episode coming up Thursday night. So a lot to get to, guys and girls. Thanks for watching, and we'll be back next week. Take care.